Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. As a lifelong Chicagoan, that weather report that Roger just gave is one of the weirdest I have ever heard in my life. I was, however, outside on the coldest day in the history of Chicago, January 20-something or other in 1985. It was January 20th, 1985. It was Super Bowl Sunday. And I, because it was the coldest day in history, decided I should go out and feel what it's like. It was bad. Welcome to the show. It's a jam-packed show. I was incredibly nice to all of my guests by telling them, stay home. We can do this. This is a modern age, and we can do this by phone. Michelle Boone, are you on the line?
I am.
It is so nice to talk to you. You are now. I think, and I've known Michelle for a long time and consider her a very good friend, and I'm a great admirer. Your title at Navy Pier is cumbersome to me. Chief Program and Civic Engagement Officer.
Quite a mouthful, huh?
Yeah, it is a mouthful. And I think that when people think of Navy Pier, Michelle, and tell me I'm wrong, they mostly think, oh, that's a great place to go in the summer. Maybe not so much in the winter. We're going to try to convince people that it's a place to go right now. But that is true. I mean, the place is just jammed in the summertime, is it not?
The place is jammed in the summer. And guess what? It's actually jammed right now. In the winter, because of the great programming that we have available.
You do. I mean, I think a lot of people get introduced to the pier in the winter by that, the Winter Fest thing that, the young Wonder Fiona Fest. Kogan and I have been to, I don't know, 10 years in a row or something.
Very good.
That's gotta be a huge draw, is it not?
It is. In fact, this past winter was the 18th year of Winter Wonder Fest.
Oh, my God.
So it's quite a Chicago tradition now. We've seen families grow up over the years and even new families, people that came as kids are now bringing their own children back to Winter Wonder Fest.
You know, I was at Navy Pier a week ago Friday for the first time in some time. I used to work there at WBZ for a while, and I've been known to frequent the Billy Goat. I am stunned and quite pleased by the transformation that's going on there. Michelle, could you kind of delineate the changes that have gone on there in new businesses and just opening it up.
Yeah, the entire pier, actually.
Pardon me?
The entire pier.
Yeah, actually. I know.
So in 2016, the pier was celebrating its century of being in existence in Chicago. Can you imagine? Navy Pier has been around for 100 years.
Ugh.
And the leadership of the pier, as they were approaching this great milestone, began to think about, well, what's going to be the role or the place for Navy Pier in the hearts of Chicagoans for the next 100 years?
Yeah.
And embarked on this really ambitious centennial plan, which included kind of a transformation, as you said earlier, of the physical space. And so they worked with James Corner, the architect that has done lots of innovative public spaces, mm-hmm. including the High Line in New York, to open up the South Dock, the promenade, the
sure.
main promenade that is adjacent to Lake Michigan, and really connect the people back to the beautiful waterfront,
yeah.
the nature. People don't necessarily or hadn't necessarily thought about the environment that Navy Pier exists in. And so connecting people to the land, the water, and the air in new and interesting ways. And so opening up those spaces so people could actually see our beautiful, majestic lakefront, have benches installed and places for people to have respite and relax. And then the other big major transformation came through the gift from the Polk Brothers Foundation, which allowed the pier to kind of revamp its, if you will, front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
with the addition of what is now Polk Brothers Park, we have two performance stages outside.
I know.
And it's just gorgeous. The landscaping, places where you can come and bring a little picnic and enjoy a jazz concert or perhaps enjoy a film. We have a movie series that happens every summer, Waterflix.
Yep.
But there's all kind of things that are going on. And then with that, the interior also got some love.
Yeah, no
so
kidding.
So really...
No.
And
well, you know, Michelle Boone, too, the interior needed some love. Would
oh,
you not?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was due for, as you said, a little TLC. So now you'll find that the retail is a reflective more of Chicago, as are the food options that the restaurants, if people, you know, people say Navy Pier is a place for tourists, but it's really a place for everybody in Chicagoans too.
See,
but
I'll tell you, Michelle,
Chicago,
just in my walk through, I got that sense. I at one point before you came to the pier was getting kind of down on the pier as something that seemed to me like a kind of tourist hustle. And
yeah,
in the last few
people that thought the same thing.
Yeah, I know. I think the transformation and the renovation and the addition of some new places, a place like Tiny Tavern, which is a sort of a dead local Chicago place, along with Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville, you can have. That's just
right.
Not my scene. But there are so many. I think this is a wonderful, wonderful time for people to go back to the pier. Let me ask you a question before we talk to, we're going to take a break and then talk about the reason, an incredible draw. It's one of the great art installations I have ever encountered in this city.
Wow.
Called The Beach Chicago, that is a great, it's a great thing to see. It ends on February 3rd, February 3rd being next Sunday, and it's the greatest Super Bowl alternative I've ever encountered in my life. But before we even get to that, this kind of weather, does the Ferris wheel run in this kind of polar vortex nonsense we're going to go through next week, or do you have to shut that down?
Well, we have had to shut down the Ferris wheel mm-hmm. on a few of the more challenging days with the wind, high wind,
sure.
And the ice.
Sure.
But it is built to operate year-round. The cabins are heated.
That's what
so
I remember.
When there aren't these kind of very extreme weather conditions, you can find that the Ferris wheel is open. But unfortunately, on those very windy, cold, icy days, it does not run.
But then again, Michelle Boone, the Chief Program Civic Engagement Officer at Navy Pier, and that's navypier.org if you can't figure that out, it's supposed to be like 50 degrees next Saturday and next weekend, so not to worry about the wind chill. If you'll hold on, I want to get a short commercial break in here, Michelle, and then we're going to talk at some length about the beach, which I just find, and I'm going to get your impression of it, too. Welcome back. I am on the telephone with my old friend, Michelle Boone, who kind of runs Navy Pier. Her official title is Chief Program Civic Engagement Officer. Michelle, how many years have you been at the pier now?
Just shy of three, about 2.5 years.
It must be incredible fun for you, especially with the transformation taking place these days.
Are you kidding? I'm having a blast.
Yeah, I'll bet. Because it gives you the space. I mean, it's a huge place, and it gives you the space for a lot of, you know, to express your creative wishes and wants. The current, I don't even want to call it an exhibition. I want to call it a sensation that is taking place in that grand hall. I guess it's now called
Aeon Grand Ballroom.
It's now it used to always be just the Grand Ballroom. Now it's the Aeon Grand Ballroom. It's a tremendous space that has been transformed and turned into literally a beach. How, before we get into the details of how it's a beach, how did this, did someone call you and say, hey, like, we'd like to turn the ballroom into a beach? How does this come to be from Snarkitecture, a New York-based design firm? How does this thing happen?
Well, as you know, Chicago's Art Fair, Expo Chicago,
oh, sure.
has been a part or based at Navy Pier for 8 years, the past 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I've been there, we've been collaborating on a number of public art projects.
Sure.
And so they brought to my attention this wacky idea of an indoor beach. And it had been in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and in Tampa, Paris. It was in Sydney, Australia. And, of course, Expo really wanted to have the beach installed during the time of Expo in the fall. But I really like the idea of the irony of having a beach in the winter in Chicago.
I love it, too.
And the setting of the grand ballroom really resonated with the design team at Snarkitecture. They love installing their works in spaces that really forces audiences to experience and think about architecture in new and different ways. And that certainly happens with the ballroom.
Well, that there is no question about it. I went and saw and jumped into the million balls that are part of it. You and your, basically what it is, it's taken over the 18,000 square foot space and literally turned it into an indoor beach with their lounge chairs, their lifeguard chairs and umbrellas. There are these, you know, what you would, inflatable, you know, a big duck, all sorts of other things.
Yeah, rubber duckies.
Yeah, and rubber duckies.
And all the things that you would find at a beach. And the illusion of the water is created with these 1 million plastic spheres that kind of fill the, or serve to make an ocean, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, and you and your colleagues at the pier were responsible for loading in all of those. I think it may be between 1 and 1.1 million of these little sort of plastic spherical things. What was that day like for you all?
Oh, my gosh. So it has actually taken about 2 weeks to install the complete beach.
Sure.
But we had 7 shipping containers sail across the ocean from Australia with the balls. There were 7 shipping containers filled with 2,200 boxes.
Good
God. Each holding 500 balls each.
Good God.
And so we had about 40 people over the course of about 7 hours.
Ugh.
Just emptying box after box after box of these balls until it was all complete.
All right, I got to ask you, how many of those 40 some people called in sick the next day saying, I can't get out of bed, Michelle? I'm sorry.
No, I think we'll get a lot of calls in sick when we have to box them up.
Oh my Lord. Oh, my Lord, I didn't even think of that. So I was there the opening night. It's in a preview night. And you frankly, seemed delighted by the whole scene, even though you had seen it a few hours before I saw it. I thought it was delightful, too. And I at first, Michelle Boone, I thought, well, this is something just for kids. It's fantastic for kids. But, man, did I see a lot of adults having a good time in there.
And it's been really interesting. I've noticed, you know, some grandparents come and they bring the little ones
sure.
to enjoy it. And, you know, they kind of sit on the side and say, oh, I don't want to take my shoes off. I'm just going to watch over here.
Yeah.
And I swear within 10 minutes, they're unlacing their shoes and making a dive into the beach.
Yeah, I think
it's irresistible.
And I think it taps into something. I think it taps into that kind of childhood gene that most of us have been working to bury for most of our adult lives. I just thought it was delightful. It must be a huge Instagram hit.
Well, you know, it doesn't happen if you can't gram it, right?
Yeah, well, that's not my theory, Michelle. You know that.
It has been a big, not just an Instagram hit, but it's been really wonderful to see all of the different families. You know, we're making this available to people for free.
That's one of the other things. Yeah.
Families from all over the city are coming and enjoying, you know, the first day, the public day, was last Saturday. And that was the day that, you know, you wake up that morning and every weathercaster was saying, if you don't have to go out today, stay
right,
home.
Right.
And so we thought no one would show up. And lo and behold, people were lined up to get in. And it's been at capacity every day of operation since we opened it.
Well, that's great. One of the things about an event like that and a show like that is I think it will make, and I'm trying to think big picture here, not only will it make kids think of, depending on their age, of the meaning of art and the bigger kind of picture of art and interactive kind of art, but also there's something really wonderful about having kids from, you know, Englewood playing in that big body of plastic balls alongside kids from, you know, Lake Forest and kids from Beverly and kids from Sauganash and kids from Old Town. It is really, it's public. To my mind, it is public art is the way public art should be. You got to share that opinion, don't you, Michelle?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's the equalizer. Yeah. It just brings joy to everyone, and it doesn't matter what neighborhood you're from, what background you may have. You know, we had a reporter there from Univision the other day, and it was so great to see, you know, the Latino kids just swarm this guy. He was like a movie star. But you know, it was just that moment of, We're here where, you know, this guy that we see on TV is also here having a good time.
Yeah.
It's really been something to see. And I have to, you know, just thank the people who were supporters and sponsors to allow us to even do this project. And that's the Free for All Fund from the Chicago Community Trust and Hilton Worldwide, and also our Navy Pier Associates Board for lending support so that we could make this really wonderful public art installation accessible to all.
It really is one of the great public art things. It reminds me, you know, it's like the Crown Fountain. It's everybody gathered around and sharing this kind of, you know, art experience that is not hidden behind walls. You know, the Navy Pier is annually the largest tourist draw in the city, drawing something in the neighborhood of, I think, if I'm not wrong, Michelle Boone, 4 million, maybe 5 million people a year.
Well, it's actually about 9.7 million.
Come on, jeez. Well, let me ask you this before I let you go and cuddle up in under your covers and get ready for whatever the snow is tomorrow. That what I think, just on an initial look, and I've known the pier for a long time when my uncle used to teach there when it was the University of Illinois, all throughout the Chicago Fest years and through all the Navy Pier years, that it is sort of reclaiming, I think, its place as a distinctive part of Chicago. And not that it's ignoring what tourists may want, but I think it's embellishing what makes the pier and has made it for more than 100 years special. Am I overly romanticizing this whole thing?
No, not at all. And I think that really gets to the basis of what the Centennial Plan hoped to do, that it's reclaiming the notion that it is the people's pier.
Yeah.
And it's for our people.
Exactly.
Not just, you know, visitors, but for Chicagoans. And so it's one of the most magnificent spaces that you can find, not just for our lakefront, but really anywhere in the world. It's so beautiful. This is our city's oasis.
You know, you
and
can go
so
there.
It's great that we have opportunities to, you know, reconnect back with.
But one of the great things is you can go there with 5 cents in your pocket and you can walk the length of the pier from west to east and just stand at the east edge of that pier and you will think of the city and what you see of the city in winter or summer as a unique place. Michelle Boone, you're the best. I can't wait to see what the crowd's like on Super Bowl Sunday, because there are indeed people in this world, Michelle, who don't care about football. I don't know any of them, but I don't care. Continue.
Well, you can come and enjoy the beach and maybe catch the game at halftime.
That's right. I mean, there are enough saloons that they got a billy goat down there. They have television
That's
sets.
Right.
Exactly. Make a whole day of it. Michelle, it's always great to talk to you and see you, and continued success out there, honey. You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Rick.
My pleasure. It's navypier.org, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't been there for a while, the beach is a really good excuse to go. We'll be talking Chinese New Year with Julie Ma after the news and weather report, because weather is the news. Fellow playing a very interesting instrument, and whenever I see that or hear that, I have to go to my dear friend and the source of most of the information I've ever gotten about China, my friend Julie Ma, who heads the Chinese Fine Arts Society. Julie, what was that playing?
That was actually the Horsehead Fiddle with the instruments. And if you went a little later in the track, which maybe we can do later today, the other sound that you hear, which you think is another instrument, is actually a technique called Mongolian throat singing.
I've heard of throat singing. I've had a guy on this show named Sid Yiddish, who is a throat singer, and it almost scared me. But what I've heard on this is just beautiful. Julie, welcome to the show, and thanks for getting in touch, because I'm not as attuned to Chinese New Year. I should be by now, because you and I have sort of, you know, if not celebrate, we have celebrated this time of year for many years together on the radio. It is Chinese New Year is coming up. The exact date, is it not, is February 5th, right?
That's the first day.
That is the first day. But when you go, ladies and gentlemen, as you should, to ChineseFineArts.org, you'll get this wonderful schedule of different events. There's a celebration on February 2nd at the Art Institute in Maggie Daly Park. Julie, how hard is it for you? You do this every year, and you put together what I think is just a remarkable series of events, some of them musical, some of them dance, all of them geared to enlighten people about the Chinese New Year. How hard is it for you to keep doing this?
You know, it's an effort, but it's definitely a joyful effort. We have an amazing community of performers in this city that at all different levels, from members of the Silk Road Ensemble that tour with Yo-Yo Ma, to people that practice once a week on their instruments while they have day jobs that keep them busy the rest of the time. And during Chinese New Year, we have opportunities to showcase the full range of these performers across the city. And we're so fortunate because there are so many major cultural institutions that have now embraced this time of year to celebrate Chinese culture and our 5,000-year cultural heritage.
And one of the other things I love about Chinese New Year is when you know, if I were doing a show about, oh, it's a New Year's Eve, and you do a show about, oh, there are a bunch of drink specials and a bunch of rip-offs at various restaurants, you have explained to me, and I wish you would to the listeners too, Chinese New Year is a very meaningful celebration. It involves, in many ways, cleaning up your life, correct?
That's a very good way of putting it. It's the holiday itself is a two-week celebration in China, where every day of the holiday you have something special that you do. One day you go visit your ancestral graves, one day you go visit your relatives, certain days you stay at home and just stay very quiet. But leading up to the holiday, as you said, it's a time for just cleaning up your life. And
right.
This is because Chinese people are very superstitious,
mm-hmm.
and believe very much in good luck and also in bad luck. And
yeah.
So the idea of cleaning everything up is that you hopefully sweep all of the bad luck out of your life. So you clean your house. You get your hair cut, you pay your bills, you collect on your debts, and you just try and do everything you can to start the year with a fresh start at the beginning of the new year. And then on the first day of the new year, you do everything you can to scare away any bad luck that might still be lurking around and thinking about coming back to you. So you have lion dancers, and you have drums, and you make a loud noise, and you set off firecrackers, and you do all of these things to scare away the bad luck, so that your year is set off set up to have a very good start.
Yeah, I love the symbolism of it all. And, you know, when people have seen those, you know, I guess, Julie Ma, the most familiar image that people have of Chinese New Year is the you know, sort of the dragons, those beautifully colorful dragons and other monsters that walk down the streets in Chinatown and other places. The your mom, your dear mom, founded the Chinese Fine Arts Society in 1984 with the express purpose of doing what you're doing now, to sort of spread in a kind of joyful, enlightening way the many, many aspects of Chinese culture.
Yes, the Chinese Fine Arts Society was founded, as you said, by my late mom in 1984. And our mission is to promote understanding and awareness of Chinese culture through music, dance, and the visual arts. And one of the things that is somewhat unique about the Chinese Fine Arts Society is it's very much a outreach and a cultural exchange type of mission. So it's Chinese culture, not just for the Chinese community, although, of course, that's very important, but also creating opportunities for our the community at large to celebrate the holiday with us.
Sure.
And one of the things that's been really wonderful over the last few years is Mayor Emanuel once wanted to make the city very China-friendly, and he signed an agreement with the Chinese Ministry of Culture to bring cultural performances from China here every year with the idea of, again, sort of showing the latest and greatest and the best and the brightest of Chinese performers, even in China, and showcasing them here, and then also giving our local artists the opportunity to perform as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's been very successful. The city has really become a very China-friendly city, especially during Chinese New Year.
Well, we will go through, after we take a little commercial break at in about 3 minutes, go through the various events, such as the matinee performance of the China National Peking Opera Company, which is Thursday, February 7th. Again, you can get all the information you need at ChineseFineArts.org. Information about these events, all of which you might think about availing yourself of. Now, the New Year's are they all have a name, and they're all based on like an animal. Why, Julie Ma? Why is that? I know you've told me over the years, but I always seem like, oh, my God, year of the pig. This is the year of the pig. And I know there was a year of the rabbit, and there was a year of this. Remind me of that tradition, that ancient tradition.
The year is based on a 12-year cycle,
right?
The Chinese zodiac cycle. It's 12 years. Each year has an animal representing it. And then the people that are born in that year are supposed to have certain characteristics based on their animal year. And so this year is the year of the pig. It's supposed to be, the people that are born in the year of the pig are fortunate and they're prosperous and they're, I wouldn't say lazy, but good luck comes to them. And so they're able to have a lot of success in life. And people are very happy when they have children that are born in the year of the pig because of that.
Because they think they can go out and buy a lottery ticket and they will win. It is sort of like, you know, astrological signs in the Western world, I suppose. But I'm always fascinated by it. I always look up to make sure that I was born in the correct year. I'm on the phone with Julie Ma, who runs the Chinese Fine Arts Society, which the big time of the year is right now, beginning this coming Saturday and going through the following week. But they have programs all year long. I have seen a number of them and spent some time in a basement on the West Side watching young girls dance, and it's an amazing thing. So, Julie, if you'll hang on for a few minutes, you and I can then, and thanks so much for coming on, hear a little bit more music that you sent me, and we will go through this calendar of events of the celebration of Chinese New Year 2019 one by one, and if you've been listening to Julie Ma, she's so passionate that she will make you want to go. I will tell you before you get... you've always been like that, don't kid me. Before we get to commercials, I'll tell you that coming up way after these commercials, the Stories That Matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Julie Ma. That's really, really lovely. Julie Ma keeps sending me these tunes, as she has done every year. Some years you've had the young performers come in and play. Julie, what was that?
It was the Mongolian lute.
Oh.
And again, it's one performer. He's just remarkable, and I'm so happy that we will have him at several of our events this season, as we have in the past few years.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Okay, Julie Ma of the Chinese Fine Arts Society, let's go through these various events. It seems to get more detailed every year. On Saturday, February 2nd, there are events taking place from 1 to 4:30 at the Art Institute, and then the lantern procession will begin at 5 p.m., I know much of this, but I like to play dumb on the show, Julie. So what is the lantern procession?
So lanterns are a big part of Chinese New Year. It's something, again, to ward off bad luck. People hang red lanterns all through the Chinese New Year season. And we started this event last year, and it was so much fun that we decided to try and do it again, even though the weather could be a little bit cold.
No, but it's not. I'm serious. This Saturday, Julie, I got to tell you, this Saturday it's supposed to be 50 degrees. I know that sounds bizarre, but it's going to be comparatively beautiful out. So don't even worry about that.
I'm really hoping that the weather will turn as predicted. It's gone from a prediction of 15 degrees to 50 in the last few days.
So these weather people don't know what they're talking about.
But it's a wonderful procession where we provide a lot of lanterns. People can also bring their own. And we have the lion dancers start us right across the street from the modern wing of the Art Institute, because, as you mentioned, there will be events going on at the Art Institute all day. But then we hope that everybody will come out the modern wing exit, come across the street, and join the procession. And then our lion dancers will take us across through Millennium Park over to Maggie Daly to the skating ribbon.
Yeah.
Where we have figure skaters from Figure Skate Chicago, as well as from McFetridge. They'll be doing just dancing or skating with Chinese dance costumes and ribbons and fans. It's just a beautiful sight.
Yeah, it sounds.
And then there will be art making. There will be some food from Tsurama. It's just going to be a really fun event.
Sounds
amazing.
It's a
wonderful way to kick off Chinese New Year.
And then you have on Tuesday, February 5th, at the Chicago Cultural Center, the citywide Chinese New Year kickoff. What goes on there? You have a bunch of performances going on there, don't you?
Yes, it's a one-hour event. We hope to get a lot of the loop.
Yeah, because it's at noon.
People are in the loop because it's right at the Cultural Center, and it's in Preston Bradley Hall, the beautiful room with the mosaic, the Tiffany Dome, and it's just such a beautiful space. And again, we start off with the lion dancers because that's the first day of Chinese New Year, so they will be making a lot of noise. And then we will have our award-winning Flying Fairies dance troupe performing a beautiful ribbon dance with these gigantic 20-foot ribbons. It's phenomenal. And then there will be martial arts and our peepaw master that performs in the Silk Road. His name is Yang Wei, and he'll be making a special performance. And then we'll get a sneak peek of the China National Peking Opera Company, that is the troupe that's coming over from China this year to perform.
And they're performing Thursday. Wow, the great thing is there's so much. I don't know how you do that. Julie Ma, I've admired you for a long time, but it gets more involved and more extravagant every year. At the Apple Store on Michigan Avenue on Saturday, February 9th from 1 to 3:30. Now, what goes on there?
Well, I like to think of this is a new thing.
Yeah.
And we're so happy that Apple as a company has embraced Chinese culture by adding the peepaw, the instrument that I was just talking about a moment ago.
Sure.
which is a Chinese lute. They've added it into GarageBand. And so I view this event as basically Peepaw meets GarageBand.
Oh, how neat.
So Yang Wei is going to be performing, and then the people in the audience will be given iPads and learn how to play the Peepaw in GarageBand. And then he's going to take all the music that they create and improvise with it at the end to make this last finale piece. So it's going to be
unbelievable.
Just phenomenal.
And then I love the title of the next thing, the thing that takes place Friday, February 15th at the Roosevelt Collection Shops, that gathering of stores on Roosevelt Road, 150 Roosevelt Road, the Pig Freeze. What is that?
That is, they came up with it, but I love the name.
Yeah, I know, me too.
They're going to have this larger-than-life pig sculpture, an ice sculpture, which they're going to be unveiling at that
and that's,
event.
You know, and that's a day where you're hoping that it's really cold out.
Exactly. We really hope that that day will be cold and the next day will be warm.
Yeah, it's perfect. Perfect. And then you go. I just had Michelle Boone on from Navy Pier talking about the exhibit, the beach that is in the Aeon Grand Ballroom. It will be gone by next Sunday. And on Saturday, February 16th, you'll be there, right?
Yes, and we're so grateful that Michelle supports our event there every year.
Yeah, she's great.
Such fun at Navy Pier every year because it's such an amazing space. So the whole Aeon Ballroom will be transformed into a Chinese night market. They are so amazing. They even black out all the windows, so it gives it this very fest. And then we hang this huge red pagoda, and then we have these drummers, and we have a stage, really great stage, and all kinds of performers from the entire Chicagoland area that perform Chinese dance, music, martial arts, Chinese yo-yo. Our throat singer will be there, as well as Yang Wei. And so it's just an extravaganza of Chinese arts.
Well,
and we also
real
have a marketplace the floor where you can buy all kinds of little Chinese chachkas. You can get your name written in Chinese calligraphy. You can have a glitter tattoo of a dragon or a pig. It's a really, really fun event, and we always have a lot of people come, and it's all free. And except for the marketplace, of course, you have to buy the things in the marketplace. But
you're not giving things away. This is a great thing, Julie. It gets more extravagant than I think, more entertaining, and I think also more enlightening with every passing year. You are a woman of immense creativity, but you're also a tireless soul. Julie, it's great to talk to you. I want to end with, if we can, if Ernie's around, a little bit more music. What's this last piece that we can hear? What's the last piece you sent? Because Ernie wants
very,
he says it's very upbeat. My great engineer, Ernie Skatton, says it's very upbeat, and I think to end, you've been very upbeat as usual, Julie Ma. Tell us what this is before we hear it.
This is a very traditional Chinese piece played during the holidays, and it's being performed by Yang Wei, the Peepaw master that I've mentioned a few times.
Who is all over here. He's at the Navy Pier thing, too.
He's at the Navy Pier event. And I did also want to just briefly mention that event on Thursday. It's a student matinee of the Chinese National Peking Opera that's going to be presented by Symphony Center Presents on the 10th.
Right.
But this is an event for students, so it's a matinee, it's a school performance, and we definitely welcome school field trips that want to come. It's at the Benito Juarez Community Academy.
Oh, that's a nice place, yeah.
It's a wonderful place that just right near Chinatown, and we always get a lot of students from that area come.
Sure.
And it's a wonderful event.
Julie, you're the greatest.
I also did want to mention that True Chicago has definitely helped us with being able to present all of this, and we have to
nice people
give them a
over
shout
there. Out. Nice people over there. Julie, you're the best. ChineseFineArts.org, and we will end this segment and say goodnight to Julie with a piece of music. Perfect. Right, this is nicely up. I said before, ChineseFineArts.org, they really have a number of fantastic events for this, the Year of the Pig. Stay tuned. We'll be talking to my friend Rick Belairs in Woodstock about the Groundhog Day festivities. This is all like stuff for you to do. Then we'll be talking to Mark Howard of the Trinity Irish Dance Company. So stay tuned. You're not going anywhere tonight, that's for sure. Welcome back to After Hours. Man, is that a bleak weather forecast.
I tried to say it with a smile on my face.
It's so bizarre. I mean, it literally is so bizarre. And then when you add in, as we've, you know, you look at that long-term forecast, and it's like, oh, well, next week is 50 next weekend. It's just insane, Roger. And I know you're keeping close tabs on it. I know over the next few days you'll be, watching all school closings and business closings. I got to believe Wednesday, half the city is going to be closed. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think that, especially with the schools in the city, that they will see that and go. Because it's not that the schools won't be ready for the kids.
Right.
It's the kids waiting for the buses.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, or walking to school.
It is dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen to this interview, Roger, because I have my friend Rick Belairs, the real estate genius from Woodstock and a movie star of some note. We'll get into that. Rick, I must tell you, when I was looking over today thinking, oh, my God, they're going to have Groundhog Days in Woodstock this week. The groundhog is going to commit suicide, I thought. But it turns out. That very wisely, Groundhog Day falls after the polar vortex. Were you worried at all when this weather started to take a weird turn like this?
Yes, I've been watching it with some curiosity. You know, all the snow we're supposed to get tonight would have made a mess, and the bitter cold that's going to be Wednesday would be awful, but it sounds like by Saturday for Groundhog Day, it's supposed to be much warmer.
I keep hearing it's going to be 50. You must have had, Rick, and the groundhog I've written about and enjoyed. I love Woodstock. It wasn't quite so far on Route 47 from the expressway, I'd live there in a heartbeat, but I got to go to work. You've been out there for a long time. It is. Talk to me for a while, Rick, before we get into the specifics of the Groundhog Day's events. And I think it expands sort of every year. Because there was a certain movie made in that charming town that has become a real classic. But Woodstock is a remarkable place. I mean, pretend I'm a potential home buyer out there, and you're telling me about Woodstock. Would you, Rick?
So we're just far enough from Chicago to get there to enjoy it, but far enough out that we're just on a much quieter pace.
Yeah,
we still have farmland surrounding us. We're an hour and a half on the Metra Northwest train line, or as you said, about half an hour, 20 minutes off of Interstate 90 if you get off at the Huntley exit. So the downtown area is this charming square. There's a park in the center of town with a cobblestone brick drive around it. The park in the center of town, they close the square for traffic a couple times a year for art fairs. Wednesday evenings in the summer, the city band for over 100 years has given a free concert. People bring their blankets and lawn chairs. You have the Woodstock Opera House, where the likes of Orson Welles and Paul Newman and many others have performed. There's local theater productions and concerts. The old McHenry County Courthouse is being restored. Nice restaurant on the ground floor. Coinciding with Groundhog Day this weekend, on Saturday, there will be free tours of the Opera House. You get to go backstage, and there will be tours of the McHenry County Courthouse that is in the process of being restored now.
That's a new wrinkle. That's a new wrinkle to the Groundhog Days thing. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what are the new wrinkles? The county courthouses where, you know, the great unionist Eugene V. Debs was a prisoner for a while. What has enabled, I don't think I've ever asked you this, Rick, what has enabled Woodstock to, because you have to often fight to retain historically significant buildings in the face of developers. How did that happen?
I was just going through some old stuff of my parents a few days ago, and they came across a newspaper article after my mother had passed in 1975. Mm. And it was talking about how she had been one of those who had spearheaded a drive to save and restore the Woodstock Opera House. It was in a sad state of disrepair,
sure,
and getting worse. And there were people in the community who actually thought that what we needed was more parking, and so they should tear the Opera House down to make parking.
Well, that's the way developers think, though, as you well know. You're in the real estate business, and so your mom was instrumental then in she and like-minded preservationists in saving that, and it is an amazing building.
And the same thing was happening with the courthouse. The McHenry County Government Center had outgrown it and had built a new facility and moved out. And again, people thought, well, what we need for our businesses around the square is more parking, and so we should tear that down.
God.
Well, you know, I cannot picture the Woodstock Square without the Opera House and the courthouse.
No, those are, I mean, the other buildings that front the square on all four of those sides are, there's some charm there, but those are the two most prominent structures. Right. Were they to go, I just think it would have been, you know, the entire thing would have turned into some kind of like a strip mall-like thing, and that would have been, just to my mind, a real tragedy. There are still also some amazing homes in the area, and you are in the business of selling some of those. There is a real sense of history out there, Rick Bellairs, that I greatly admire, because coming out there in the Northwest, you can pass through places like Schaumburg and sort of really modern suburbs that did not retain that, and I don't want to call it old world quality, I just want to call it historically significant quality.
Woodstock grew from the town square, where you've got the park and the opera house and the courthouse, and then it grew in circles going out from that. The immediate area around, you've got homes from 1880s, 1890s, mm-hmm, classic Victorians, and then you grew further out and you've got homes that were built in the 1920s. And then there's another circle that was like 1940s to 1960s.
Yeah.
And now a little bit further out, you've got homes that are being built now. So the town has grown in circles, but coming from the heart of the town, which is the square.
Yeah, which appreciates it. Well, we will take a little commercial break, Rick Bellairs. And what is your email? I'm going to the email for the stuff we're going to be talking about after a short commercial break is woodstockgroundhogday.org. But what is your email, Rick, in case people want to explore living in Woodstock?
It's rick@rickbellairs.com. The last name is Bellairs.
You may remember his father, Mal, who was a famous longtime radio. He was more than a radio personality. He was a radio legend in this town. I don't throw the word legend around often. So stay tuned, everybody. And Rick, you hang on, and we'll be back in a couple minutes to get details. The Groundhog will not have to commit suicide. He may sunbathe on Saturday. Who knows? Welcome back. Rick Kogan, After Hours, talking to my friend Rick Bellairs. Is it snowing out there, Rick, in Woodstock?
I was just going to tell Roger that it's just a little bit of light flurry starting.
All right. We got instant weather reports to help Roger Battish with this crazy weather. Rick is an active participant in the civic affairs of Woodstock. And Groundhog Day events is something that started... How long ago, Rick?
Well, the movie was filmed in 1992, mostly in Woodstock.
Right.
It came out in 1993. And probably the following year for Groundhog Day, there were a few people from around town who celebrated.
Right.
Sort of just a small little thing. And it has grown and grown and grown. And each year we get more and more people coming from farther and farther out. Most of your listeners are hardly an hour away from Woodstock, but we're getting people coming from New York and California and the Carolinas and even some other countries coming for Groundhog Day. So our fame has spread.
Well, in part because that film has attained the level of justifiable, to my mind, of a classic. And Bill Murray being Bill Murray and Harold Ramis being, you know, now dead, and his daughter Violet just writing a book about Harold. And you were in, I don't mean to make too much of this, Rick, but you were one of the unheralded stars of that film. How did that happen?
Well, they came to Woodstock to make a movie, and they announced that they were looking for extras. Nobody really knew much about the movie, what it was going to be about or anything.
Sure.
But you had to be available multiple days because they were going to be shooting the same day over and over again. And each day they shot something, the weather had to be the same. So you had to commit for an extended period. So they had people come to Woodstock High School and sign in. And many of the people you see in the crowd scenes are just local residents.
Yeah, which I love, yeah.
And we have each weekend during Groundhog Day, free showing of the movie Groundhog Day in the Woodstock Theater. And it's funny because you can sit there watching the movie and there's always somebody who was in the movie there, and you can hear this, okay, are you ready?
That's me. That's me. Look, freeze that movie. Stop. Freeze frame. And that was not quite the end of your movie career, but it was the high point of your movie career. This Tuesday, I am assuming when the everything kicks off that this Groundhog Day party is indoors on Tuesday, yes?
Tuesday is indoors. That's a kickoff at the McDonald's on Route 47 in Woodstock. Then Wednesday, the coldest day, luckily for us, is an off day.
I know. You're so wise. That's so perfect. And that had happened, you know, when you planned this whole thing. Then Thursday, you have Groundhog Story Time. Tell me what that is.
So the Woodstock Public Library has stories particularly groundhog-oriented for kids, and that's in the Stage Left Cafe, part of the Opera House. And then we have The Awakening, which is like Woodstock Willie's first appearance of the season. And then that's followed by trivia, Woodstock Groundhog Day movie trivia.
Where does that take place?
That's in the Stage Left Cafe as well.
Then you have on Friday, February 1st, Groundhog Movie Memorabilia. I'm assuming that's a kind of exhibit of movie memorabilia.
Columbia Pictures left lots of things from the movie behind, sketches from scenes and pictures of the places they were going to use in the movie. We have a copy of the script that was signed by Harold Ramis. And the big exciting thing this year in Groundhog Day in Woodstock is that Stephen Tobolowsky, who played the annoying insurance agent Ned Ryerson, is coming back to Woodstock for Groundhog Day again this year. He's been before, but it's been a while.
He has. We had him on, you and I think of us as the Groundhog Day radio couple. We had him on the radio before, and he's a very decent, good guy. I'm sure he's coming back because he knows it'll be fun, and it has been fun for
him. He's going to be at the library, and we'll be able to tell some of his stories there on Friday.
So Saturday, however,
that's the big day.
Saturday's the big day. The groundhog, who I've written about the groundhog before, he lives not far from Woodstock, and he's rented and comes in. He comes in. What time does that happen? At sunrise, right?
7 o'clock in the park in the square.
Oh, God, how wonderful. And that whole day, I mean, you can fill the whole day with events. There's a Groundhog Day breakfast, groundhog wood carving. What is that? Do people have to carve groundhogs or do their best?
There's a professional wood carver. He has a log, and he will have his chainsaw. And through the course of Saturday morning, people can watch him turn that into a groundhog. And then at 10 o'clock Saturday morning, we've got the free showing of the movie Groundhog Day in the theater. And then throughout the day, as you said, there's bingo and trivia, and you can go bowling in the bowling alley that was used in the movie. There's a bags tournament, a pub crawl. It's a whole day of a...
Well, and the other thing I like, and I think this is a relatively new addition, is the Opera House and Old Courthouse tours that are going to take place, I mean, all throughout the day, I would assume.
Right. Well, they normally do these on the first Saturday of the month, mm-hmm. giving the public a chance to take a walk through the two gems on the square. And because it's Groundhog Day, they've just agreed to start a bit earlier. So from like 8 o'clock in the morning, people can go inside and see a bit of history, go backstage into the judges' chambers of the courthouse, go backstage in the Opera House. And the best part is you can go inside and warm up.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, wait a minute, though. Next Saturday, it's going to be 50 degrees. People will be out playing golf.
All right, I'll leave my booties at home then.
Yeah. The other thing that takes place on Saturday the 2nd is the walking tour of filming sites, which some people do on their own. It can be a kind of do-it-yourself kind of thing, right? There's a map and all that jazz and where the puddle was that the Russian stepped in.
Right. We've got a map that shows the spots, and the places around town are plaqued. So you can see where the puddle is that Bill Murray stepped in. There's a plaque on the bed and breakfast where Bill Murray stayed and woke up every morning looking out on Groundhog Day. So these plaques are around town. So you can wander on your own or take the tour.
Let me ask you, Rick, I did a story with your immense help some years ago about the people who had bought the house that functioned as the B&B where Bill Murray stayed and woke up every morning to Sonny and Cher. Yes. What is it, still a B&B?
It is. It is called the Cherry Tree Inn B&B.
Uh-huh.
These are the second owners now. Before, when they made the movie, it was actually a private residence.
Right, where you used to go up and play with the kid in the attic. I mean, you went to school with someone.
So after the movie, it was life imitating art. The home became the bed and breakfast. It's now in its second owners, and they're very involved in the Groundhog Day festivities. And they give tours, and people can go in and see the bed and breakfast.
Oh, that's so nice.
Where he stayed.
Well, they must also, I mean, it's a beautiful building. I have not been inside, but it's a beautiful, beautiful building. And I got to believe that place is booked solid because there's some real Groundhog Day fanatics. I mean, I know that and once met or heard from a couple from Japan who would come to Woodstock to see where the movie was made. And I'm assuming they stayed there. Does it do
for
a good...
For Groundhog Day weekend, they're booked about a year in advance. Yeah,
wow.
It's a very busy weekend for them. They're busy all year round, but for Groundhog Day weekend, it's just ridiculous.
Now,
but that is one of those 1890s Victorians I was talking about that feather out from the town square.
For you, there must be, Rick Bellairs, to get a little personal, there must be a real... You must feel a real sense of pride when people fill that town, as they will in the next much of the next week for these Groundhog Day festivities. Yes, it's celebrating a cool and interesting and arresting and 4-star movie, but it's also celebrating a place. Am I being too romantic about all this?
No, I think it actually has almost grown beyond the movie. And I even mentioned to somebody the other day that if the movie hadn't become the classic that it is, would we even be doing this?
Yeah.
But it does draw people, and it's a fun event in the middle of winter. Christmas is behind us. Spring is a ways off. There's a group of volunteers who put this together each year, and it's just for fun. Most of our events are free or for the benefit of local civic organizations. And it is fun to see the people come to town. Last year, I remember walking around the square, and I have a groundhog on my hat, so I'm rather...
Of course you do. Well, of course you do, yeah.
And people kept coming up to me, telling me how much they liked the town, how friendly the people were.
Yeah.
And it was just all great stuff to hear.
Yeah, that really is great stuff to hear. And when you go, ladies and gentlemen, to... WoodstockGroundhogDay.org.
Rick, it's WoodstockGroundhog.org. The website doesn't have day.
Oh, no day.
WoodstockGroundhog.org.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bellairs. WoodstockGroundhog.org and see all the events, many, 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 the majority of which are free. But there are also ways to explore Woodstock. It's, excuse me, Woodstock itself. Well, stay warm the next few days, Rick Bellairs.
Thank you very much.
Boy, you must have been terrified for a while, thinking, "Oh my God!"
We were getting nervous. I was glad to see the weather kind of come in with a bang, but get out before the weekend.
It is. You and I are both Midwesterners, and this is even for us. This is a strange, strange week of weather. Knock 'em dead, Rick, and thank you so much for reminding me of it. And it's a special place, ladies and gentlemen. If you've never been to Woodstock, this would be a good time to explore it. Arlene Lines is still good with her bookstore?
Oh, yeah. And she's good. Location central for Groundhog Day souvenirs and memorabilia.
Good for her. And it's one of the great independent bookstores in this country. Rick, take care of yourself. Stay warm. And then pet the groundhog for me if he doesn't bite
Thanks,
you.
Rick. Happy
All right.
Groundhog
take care.
Day.
Thank you very much. He's a very good guy, Rick Bellairs. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan, and on the phone, a man who I have known for more than 20 years. He is not only a really good guy and a great guy to have a drink with, as I recall, he is also the greatest Irish dancer I've ever known. Mark Howard, how are you?
Rick Kogan.
Mark Howard.
It's embarrassing that you're throwing out how many inches are dropping in Chicago while I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
How bad is it up there?
It's just started. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
But it's cold.
I bet it's cold.
Today, I just saw some ducks killing each other over down feathers. That's
how did the show go last night? You were up there at a place about an hour north of Minneapolis with your great, 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 the greatest Irish dance group I've ever seen, the Trinity Irish Dance Company. How did it go last night?
Oh, it was wonderful. This was a warm-up, or maybe that's the wrong word to use, for our auditorium theater gig next week.
Next Saturday night. This is, Mark, you know what amazed me? I didn't know this about you. I learned today that you were born in Yorkshire. You have ever seemed to me such a quintessential Chicagoan. How old were you when you came here?
Well, you know, that's true. I grew up in the 70s. You know, dancing here ultimately on church basement floors,
sure,
and back row bars. It's sort of like a Martin Scorsese movie. and I had somewhat of an idyllic childhood, I would say, growing up with my mom and dad, who did get off of a boat. It's the Queen Mary, actually, you know? And it landed us, when I was 2 years old, in Rogers Park, which is sort of a collection of, at that time, Leave It to Beaver blocks and sometimes menacing and hard scrabble place.
How did
many generations of German, Italian, and Irish parents? You know?
Did you and your family wind up moving south? Because I know you went to the Dennehy School of Irish Dance. I mean, when you started there at five. Why did you start there, Mark? Did your parents say you've got to learn to dance?
Well, my parents, like many others, or any ethnic background, sometimes try to recreate their roots here, and Irish step dancing becomes something they would like my sister and I to join. But the best Irish dancers, in North America, really, were the Dennehy Irish Dancers, and they were quite a journey, you know, from Rogers Park. And they still are the bomb, you know, so that's where I come from. That's who trained me, March and Dennis Dennehy.
Yeah.
And I did go to St. Ignatius High School, which is as far south as I kind of get, other than once dating a girl in Beverly.
That's kind of halfway to Beverly. Yeah, that's kind of halfway to Beverly. Were you
no stranger to Jansen's hot dogs, though.
I do indeed know that. You have seen thousands of dancers in your life. Were you a natural? You became a champion when you were quite young. Were you born to it, Mark, do you think, or is that a little
you're
agey? Like,
it's unusual for you to be so off base. I was not the guy, the dancer. It would be shocking if somebody told you back then that I would end up, you know, starting a dance school and having any success with all whatever. They would, I was akin to the Jamaican bobsled team, you know, when I started doing this. So, through resilience, somehow I figured some things out, you know, and how to sort of pass on traditions and coach children, which ultimately led to some of the more creative stuff that led to the professional company. But
well,
no,
there's stuff you're doing now, and I want to drive people to the website, because it's sometimes, Mark, I think, and you know this much, much better than I, when someone hears the phrase Irish dance, their mind immediately goes to the, you know, my daughter did it, and it's a lovely little thing, and it's, you know, it's on TV, and you can see it around at St. Patrick's Day. What you're doing, this is what you're teaching still at the Trinity School of Dance, but this is not what you are doing with your troupe of, how many dancers are in there, 40-some or 50-some?
Well, the Trinity Irish Dance Company will have 22 dancers on stage next week from all around North America. We have like sort of a list of group of athletes and
exactly
artists that are trying to elevate this art form through the performing arts. It has no relationship whatsoever, really, to the for-profit dancing school
sure.
that started years ago that everybody around town sees doing St. Patrick's Day shows or dancing on Good Morning America or whatever, or winning trophies.
You know,
there's a good 30 of those types of Irish dance schools in Chicago and just thousands around the world.
And you like and admire them. You have no resentment for them. That's one form of this thing. But tell me I'm wrong, Mark Howard, that I think what happened was, you know, in the late 80s, and you had some great dancers that you would train from the school. They were winning awards and prizes, and then there was like, now what do we do? Do you know what I mean? And that was was that the motivation for starting the nonprofit company, right?
Well, all of this is really a happy accident. So yes, I start out kind of backing into teaching children. When I was at Ignatius High School, I had already started my dance school. And then I had the sort of misguided enthusiasm to think maybe one day they could win some of America's first team world titles. Eventually we do that. That gets us like on The Tonight Show and every other sort of show. And then that leads to being invited abroad to
international festivals,
Royal Family of Monaco, or, you know, a guru at one point. And then I started sort of picking up, you know, I was watching Ballet Folklore of Mexico or Kodo Japanese drummers and started to think, you know, why not? Why can't we, you know, elevate our ethnic form in that way?
Sure.
And then people in the community here from Hubbard Street, like Gail Calvert, who built Hubbard, or so many that started to suggest that I had rep, and I didn't know what repertoire was. And they said, you have a body of work, and, you know, you could start a nonprofit, 501c3. I didn't know what that was.
Sure.
And, you know, you could be the artistic director. And so I thought, hey, that's a cool title. So I sort of, you know, we made this jump from the competitive stage to the concert stage in, like, 1990.
Right.
And all I knew was that I wanted to elevate the form, so I never would have seen any kind of commercial thing coming. So, you know, that's kind of how it all starts.
Yeah.
And by the way, my voice is bouncing back at me. I apologize, Rick.
No, it sounds fine here. It really does. It sounds fine here. I think all of the exposure, too. One of the cool things about Irish dance and many ethnic dances of different ethnicities can really be kind of ghettoized, if that's the right word. And I think what others have done and what you are doing is being allowing yourself to be open to influences of this wonderful place we call the world. Is that making too poetic nonsense of this whole thing, Mark?
No, as a nonprofit performing arts company and sort of the only Irish dance thing that sort of exists in that wheelhouse, you know, next to Alvin Ailey Dance Company or Hubbard, our future is driven by, you know, a persistent desire to use the power of art to change lives and to celebrate this art by pushing its boundaries, but in an integrity-filled way.
Yeah.
CIDC is a place that changes the dialogue within Irish dance and, like, redirects the conversation to be focused on the integrity of work.
Yep.
We even go as far as to engage in social dialogues through movement and female empowerment and try to make a space for Irish dance to be explored and celebrated through the performing arts lens.
You have always been such a gentleman about about a number of Irish dance phenomenons that have occurred. I want to talk to you about that. We got to take a little commercial break first. I have Mark Howard on the phone from Frigid, Minnesota. I hope he can get back to Chicago tomorrow whenever he decides to come back. But we're talking about a performance of... It really is. One of the slogans of it is everything you expect, but like nothing you'd imagine. The Trinity Irish Dance Company at the Auditorium Theater. You can go to auditoriumtheaterwithanre.org, or you can go to trinityirishdance.com. We'll be back in 2.5 minutes. Welcome back, me, Rick Hogan, my friend in Minnesota, Mark Howard, who is a Chicagoan through and through, even though he was born in England. He is returning, I never knew that, Mark. I feel like an idiot.
That was like a slap. He's a Chicago.
I know, he's a Chicago. No, I'm never going to tell anybody. I may write about it this week, and I will have a story about the Trinity Irish Dance Company's returning to the stage of the Auditorium Theater, which is one of the places they belong, this Saturday night, with a world premiere or two. A lot of the show is about, and I'm fascinated by this, Mark, the female empowerment. That's obviously been driving your shows for some time, hasn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, that's been a long time. The Irish dance... you know, is inherently a powerful art form, and it's shaped by the resilience of this heavy percussion. And unfortunately, over the course of time, some of the commercial stuff that's out there, provides, unfortunately, sort of a female objectification. You know,
yep.
Something that we in sharp contrast as a company, we invite the dancers to, the female dancers, not only make noise, but encourage them to make noise. And so we kind of combat those wrong-headed signals sent out to society about, you know, gender equity and, you know, the role of women in our society. So they're very strong people, and I think the choreography and the physicality sort of speaks for itself, and the understatedness of the work.
I do, too. On your website, people can get, I think, a real good taste of it. You've got, like, they aren't long videos, but, like, 4 short videos that really, really capture what you do, and it is not... the Lord of the Dance or River Dance. And Mark has always been, Mark Howard, you've always been sort of a real gentleman about those shows. They're vastly, vastly different. And I don't know perhaps how damaging. I mean, certainly the Trinity Company formed the basis of kind of progressive Irish dancing that someone, a guy who learned to dance here too, took to new commercial levels. But and you don't think of yourself, I don't think, Mark Howard, as any kind of rarefied artist. You are just exploring your own. It's your own creative adventure, isn't this?
Well, it's just sort of a accidental evolution, you know, that was born out of kind of achieving the things I wanted to with children in the school that. Thrives today, the Trinity Academy of Irish Dance, and I sort of just wanted to evolve, you know, and had no idea really early on that I had an ability to choreograph, you know, on a performing arts stage, but it's just one of those things you kind of push yourself to not be, you know, to embarrass yourself in the beginning, and then
sure.
You sort of figure it out along the way.
Well,
and,
you once
yeah,
told
the company, the
Go
company,
ahead.
You know, Riverdance was a commercial reaction to this nonprofit company that started in 1990.
Right.
And that's such a class show, but it's really apples and oranges from a performing arts company. It's like comparing an independent filmmaker to a Hollywood filmmaker, you know? They're both great, but they're very different. And don't get me wrong, TIDC is a wildly accessible and entertaining company that resonates with 8-year-olds and 88-year-olds.
Oh, sure.
And critics and presenters from, you know... Japan to New York City, but Tokyo to New York City. But you don't have to remotely care about Irish dance to be inspired by this group of, you know, performing artists. And as a nonprofit, it's a unique forum for creativity. It's a serious performing arts company.
Yeah.
With this A-list of dancers with a celebrated body of new and classic work. And we're here, before commercial things, and we'll be here long after. And what else could I tell you? It's I was reminded by my artistic associate artist director the other day of a line in an article you wrote some years ago when she was looking you up, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but they're sort of comparing the nonprofit Trinidad Dance Company to commercial shows is akin to comparing, I don't know what you said, the bullseye.
No, I do. I know what I, no, I tell you exactly what I said. I said, but, I even have it in the story that's going to be in Tuesday's paper because I want, it's too good to pass up. I once said that Lord of the Dance and Riverdance are Trinity's glitzy commercial cousins. They are Disney on ice as compared to the Bolshoi Ballet, and I stick by that. You seem, Mark Howard, to still be to get such joy out of being a choreographer and artistic director and exploring. You know, what I think you do, Mark, is you kind of bring... It's not, I hate the phrase world music, but what you're doing here is creating a kind of world dance that, and you've made the point to me that, that there would be no tap dancing without Irish dancing first and, you know, sort of vaudeville. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Square dancing, clog dancing.
Really, yeah. The Irish dance form had a huge impact on what we now know as tap dancing or hoofing, and it was, you know, gumboot dancing in Africa in the mines that was another source for that. So yeah, during those vaudevillian times, you know, the Irish need not apply and the African American community they kind of came together and performed on vaudeville, and this other form evolved, hoofing, tap dance, you know, and clog dancing has roots with other European cultures, but certainly Irish step dance.
How, Mark, has Chicago, whenever we've gotten together, and it was joyfully so over drinks a few times over the last decades, Chicago in so many ways informs your work and I also think your artistic vision. Can you delineate any of that for me? First, tell me I'm right. And then, if so, tell me how you think that is.
Well, I mean, there's a certain rhythm to this city. There's a grit to it, and there's a can-do attitude or anything is possible optimism here. And it is, as you know, a patchwork. This is, you've spent a life writing about these neighborhoods, you know, and these wonderful festivals, like down at Navy Pier when I'm a kid, you know, where I'm able to have access to, you know, Mexican dance and African dance, and all of that marinates, you know, and for somebody like me that's an Irish American, I'm not Irish, you know,
born
in Ireland, it's a different animal. I mean, it took oceans of distance and generations of time to lead to me being in this urban environment called Chicago, where all the stimuli that I take in helps me spit back a different tradition, you know, carving of a new tradition. So that's where Trinity Irish Dance Company starts a new vocabulary to try to figure out how to evolve the art form. And a bunch of mistakes and a bunch of victories lead to you sort of knowing what you're doing, but there's no roadmap for what I do or what my company members do in terms of creating the quintessential Trinity Irish Dance Company piece. It's based on wanting to do work that has meaning, that has integrity, but still has a through line that connects to the ancestors and respects the traditions.
Wow, that's so
elevate. The company's here to elevate the form.
Well, and it's also such a wonderfully organic kind of thing that it has never stayed. It never stops moving in a variety of different ways.
Well, there's limitless possibilities to this or any art form, and it has to live and breathe, but it has to do so to be taken seriously as serious art. You know, everything can't be about financial gain and commercialism.
Yep.
And so there's an audience for what we do, certainly. They've been celebrated in New York recently. They toured Japan. And this is a huge moment for, I think, Chicago and this company. The Auditorium Theater is delighted. They've already doubled their expectations of ticket sales.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a huge night.
It is Saturday at 7:30. Yeah, Saturday at 7:30. You can go to Auditorium Theater with an RE.org, or you can. I would recommend you go to also to TrinityIrishDance.com. because you will get to see just a little taste of what you can expect Saturday night at the auditorium. Mark, I can't wait to see you, and we really do have to get together like the old days. Do you still dance much, Mr. Choreographer?
So, hey, quickly, I just want to tell you that website, Trinity Irish Dance Company.
Oh, sorry.
.com will take you to the performing arts company that's next week.
Gotcha.
If you go to Trinity Irish Dance,
you get the school. Yeah.
The dance school.
Life is complicated.
Yeah. It wasn't my idea to keep the same name early on, but others wanted to on the board of
directors. I get it. But, do you still dance, Mr. Choreographer?
I don't. But I will, maybe after a couple of whiskeys, when I see you.
That's what I want to see. Mark, I'm I have been an admirer of yours for 3 decades, if not longer.
Same.
And what you're doing is, you're doing it the right way. I can't tell you. Safe travels home. Stay warm, and I'll see you Saturday night.
Thank you, Rick Hogan.
My pleasure, Mark Howard. Take care.
All right.
Take care. Okay. That is the real deal, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Howard. So again, Trinity Irish Dance Company.com, Auditorium Theater.com. You'll be nuts not to go to the auditorium Saturday night to see him. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. I want to thank, of course, Ben Anderson, who I thought was lost because he didn't respond to an email. I thought, oh my God, Ben's been in a plane crash or something. Ernie Skatton, who's always here, is engineering this show. And you for listening.